to usually daven mincha at the end of 30 to daven. I have to go to the airport afterwards, so if it's possible to daven mincha afterwards, that would be a great help. Okay, thank you very much. Okay, I mentioned to Ike that I wanted to speak about tonight's Shabbat Mammon. I don't know where you're up to. This is more Perek Afal-Pi. So the Gemara in Daf Nun Vav Amud Aleph talks about a machlokas Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda regarding somebody who wants to get married on condition that they not have all of the obligations that pertain to a husband towards his wife. Says that I want to marry you, but only on condition that I not have an obligation to provide food and clothing and marital relations. So, Harezu Mekudeshu Sutano Batel Debe Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says that Tanai isn't going to work, the Tanai is null and void. It's against the Sheiksus Veona Salo Yigra, the obligations that the Torah stipulates that a husband has to provide to his wife. Therefore, the Tanai is null and void. Rabbi Yehuda Omer B'Darashim Mammon Tano Kayim. Rabbi Yehuda says, well, let's examine the different aspects of the Tanai. The share, there's Ksus, and there's Ona. So food and clothing are in the realm of Mammonis. So one can make a Tanai with respect to a Davashim Mammon, just like, for example, a Shomer Sachar can stipulate that he'll only have the obligations of a Shomachinam. A Shomachinam can stipulate that he'll have the additional obligations of a Shomer Sachar. All of that is perfectly permissible. The Gemara speaks about this in the context of the ksuva of with respect to the notion that somebody is not allowed to the wife is not allowed to forgive her ksuva if it's alpeh. That's what the Gemara says, that we require something which has to be written by her. And we ask, since Rabbi Yehuda allows a Tanai with respect to other Dava Shebe Mammon manners, why is a Ksuva any different? Why can't she just say, oh, it's all right, you're not going to owe me a Ksuva? So the Gemara answers, Kisava Rabbi Yehuda, Ksuva de Rabbanon, Chachamim, Asu Chizek Ledivreim, Yoter Mishel Torah. That's the sugya on Daf Nun Vav. So the Tosfos there, Dibar Maskil, Harezu Mekudeshes Utno Batel, asks the question according to Rabbi Meir, who seems to hold that the Tanai is Batel even though it's a Dovishim Mammon. So Rabbi Meir is of the opinion that even somebody who takes a Tanai in a Davish Shebe Mammon, if it's a Davish Shebe Mammon which is clearly stipulated in the Torah, we say that's considered to be Masna Mashikosu B'Torah. Person has taken a Tanai with respect to what's stipulated in the Torah, Utano Batel. And therefore, the Tanai is completely a Batel. So if the Tanai is Batel, I understand according to Rabbi Yehuda, the Tanai is Kayim. So he said, I'll marry you under these circumstances, not under other circumstances. So since the Tanai that the husband stipulated is fulfilled, namely, at least with respect to Davish Shebe Mammon, he doesn't have to provide share exus, so therefore they're still considered to be married. The maskan, it seems, only if he did this with share exus. Did this with the owner. So owner is already, as Rashi describes it, Sarah Guf. He's going to deprive his wife of marital relations. That he can't. That's not a Davish Shebe Mammon. That's a Tsar HaGuf. So that he wouldn't be allowed to do. But at least if the scenario is that it's a sharing ksus, so that he would be allowed to do. So I understand that the marriage is valid. We understand Harezu Mekudeshes. But according to Rabbi Meir, that the Tanai is batil, so why don't we just say the Tanai is batil, and they're also not married? That's what Tosfos asks. Tosfos asks, "Utamim kena mahi mekudeshes?" According to Rabbi Meir, "Harei hisna beferush shimihela alav sheik susviona." Said beferush that if he has to provide her with sheik susinona, she'ena mekudeshes. Don't say that she's mekudeshes to be shemekatsha amenashe timcholo. Harei machla that there's a mechila involved. Eladei mechilasa mechila. There is a mechila involved. It's just that we dismiss the mechila. Ta'atanya v'herg beis the nazir, because there's a gemara nazir that says areinu nazir amenashe eshte yayin ve'tami lemesim hareze nazir va'aser bekulan v'pnei shemasna mashikasu b'torah, because we have the same idea with respect to a nazir as well, where we say that if somebody says that he's going to be a nazir, only on condition that he'll get to drink wine, so we say the same idea, that whenever the tanai is going to be batal, because the person is masna mashikosu b'torah, and this is the case, by the way, where even Rabbi Yehuda would agree that this would be no good, because it's not a tanai shebamamon. In the case of a nazir, it's a tanai shebeisr, right? You can't make a tanai shebeisr, that you're going to do something that the Torah absolutely prohibits. You enter into a business partnership, and I'll enter into a business partnership with you, I'll deny that I get to charge ribbis. It doesn't work. It's a davar shebe'isur. It's not in, you don't have a bilus. You can't make a tenai over something that you don't have bilus. That's the Tosus later on daf ayin dalin of an aleph. Tosus says explicitly, you don't have bilus over something, you can't make a tenai. You don't have bilus over isur ve'eter. So here, even Rabbi Yehuda would agree. This is considered to be masna mashikosu b'torah. The tanai should be batel, and despite the fact that the tanai, that the fellow says, I'll be a nazir if I can drink wine, the tanai is batel, nonetheless, is he a nazir or is he not a nazir? Raise a nazir. So the Gemara says, raise a nazir. You can't talk about mechila over there. So Tosas gives the following answer. Tosas says, quotes the Ri. Omeri, if not for the fact that we derive the Hilchos Tanoim from Bnei Gad and Bnei Ruvein, the Tanai that they would get to inherit, Be'ever Hayardein, if they would go Chalutzim Latzava, if they would go first to fight the enemy on the other side of the Yardein, and otherwise they would just receive their regular inheritance on the western side of the Eber Yadin, and we learn all of the Hilchos Tanoim from Tanai B'nei Gad B'nei Ruvein. So the Ri says, the Lav, the Alpina mi Tanai B'nei Gad B'nei Ruvein, Havamina, the Shum Tanai, Eno Mevatel Esamase. Then we would have worked with the assumption that no Tanai can be Mevatel, the actual Maise that the person is performing. If he lo yiskayim himself, Hamaise Kayim. And even if the Tanai was not fulfilled, normally I would have said, one thing has nothing to do with the other, Maisa l'chud, Tanai l'chud. Tanai is not fulfilled, Maisa still stands. V'hash, the opinion me'asam, the me'hani Tanai, the batel ma'isa. And now that we derive this principle, all the principles of Tanai are derived from B'nai Gad and B'nai Ruben, and one of the principles is that if the Tanai is not fulfilled, then the Maisa is considered to be null and void. So Amina the Dafka Kisheino Masne Amashikasu Batorah. So it has to that conclusion that a non fulfillment of the Tanai is Mevatel the Maise is only if it is a Tanai which is similar to that of Bnei Gad Uvenevu Uvein. Dumya the Bnei Gad Uvenevu Uvein Shalohisnu Amashikasu Batorah. Because they did not make a Tanai with respect to something which was forbidden according to the Torah. They asked, we want to change around the Nachla that we're going to receive. How do we go about doing it? Moshe said, we'll accept a Tanai. That if you go and fight, then you can have this Yerusha, and otherwise you'll have the other Yerusha. So that's a regular Tanai that did not involve any kind of a violation of a Torah prohibition. However, if it, there is a Tanai that involves a violation of a Torah prohibition, it's Masna Mashikos to B'Torah, it's a Dovah Shebe Isser, according to Rabbi Yehuda, or even a Dovah Shebe Mamon, but it's again something which is stipulated in the Torah, like Sher Iksus, according to Rabbi Meir, so then we would no longer follow the principles of Tanai B'nei Gad and B'nei Ruvain, because it's no longer analogous, and therefore we would say that even though the Tanai is Batel, the Maisa is still Kayim. Now, Tosfos goes further, bringing another case in the Gemara in Menachos, and qualifies this a little bit. And the qualification of Tosfos runs like this. V'omeri, the lo amrinan masne amashikos of Torah tenao batel, that this chiddush that we say that the Tanai is batel, in this case, because it does not mimic the fashion of the Tanai b'nei Gad and b'nei Ruvain, which was not masna mashikos of Torah, is only in the following circumstance. L'heicha shemiskaben lakor ma shekos of Torah. It's only when there's actually kavana to do an akiras davar min a Torah. But if the person does not have in mind that he's going to be oker, that which is written in the Torah, so then it's possible for the usual rules to apply and to follow the normal principles of Tanai. If the Tanai works, the Maisa is good. Tanai doesn't work, then the Maisa doesn't work. As long as the person doesn't have in mind to be oke davar min haTorah. This idea that the Ri articulates, that there has to be a kavana to be oker min haTorah, and he says that whenever ein meskavin lakor islan lemelup mitnai de minei gad uvenei reuven, and you would follow the normal principles, is echoed by the Mordechai. The Mordechai writes this way at the beginning of Perek Afop. It's quoted by the Beis Yosef. It's quoted by the Dachi Moshe in Simen Lamed Ches Sifkaton Zayin. The Dachi Moshe quotes that even according to Rabbi Yehuda, this is not only a conclusion according to Rabbi Meir. This is even according to Rabbi Yehuda, who, as the Beis Yosef puts it, it's Yadua, that we paskin like Rabbi Yehuda and not like Rabbi Meir when it comes to this machlokas in general. We paskin like Rabbi Yehuda, not Rabbi Meir. So we paskin that a person has the ability to say, Areyat mekudeshes li, amenash ein loch alai sheru kutsus, that you're married to me only on condition that I don't have to, excuse me, supply you with sharing sus, that's only k'she'en kavanoso lehafkia dinei Torah. But if it's not a normal tanai, but rather the person just wants to be mafkia dinei Torah, he wants to go up against the normal principles of the Torah, so then even Rabbi Yehuda would agree that the tanai is batel. The reality is that this really plays out. You see this principle in the Gemara in a couple of other places. One is a Gemara at the beginning of Makos, and one is the Gemara at the beginning of the Gemara in Baba Metzia in Perek Hazov. Gemara beginning of Makos says, let's say it's a Shemitah year like now, and somebody wants to make a loan, but he's afraid the end of the Shemitah year is going to come along, his loan's going to be canceled. He doesn't want this loan to be canceled. So he says, Amenas, I'll give you a loan. Amenas lo tishmiteni shviyas. Give you a loan on condition that the Shemitah year is not going to cancel the loan. So is that a good tanai or not a good tanai?
Not a good tanai
because it's not just a davar shebemamon apipashtus. The person is saying something that's a lie. He's saying, the Torah says that the loan will be canceled at the end of the Shemitah year. I'm going to override what the Torah says. However,
Let's say he says instead, Amanashla Tishmeteni Bashvius, that I'll make you the loan on condition that you do not allow this loan to be terminated at the conclusion of the Shemitah year, despite the fact that the Torah will in fact cancel the loan. But between us, between friends, you're going to pay me anyway. Is that a good tonight?
Yes.
That's a good tonight. Mara says a good tonight. Why is that a good tonight? You have to explain, according to Rabbi Yehuda, this is a tonight shebemamun, and he's not being mafkia dinei Torah. He's not denying that the din Torah is that the loan is canceled. You're saying we're making a private deal despite the fact that the Torah is going to cancel the loan. You're going to pay me back anyway. Same thing with the Gemara in Perek HaHazav. A person charges onah, and he says, I'm going to charge you onah. I'm going to charge you more than one-sixth more of what this item costs. And we're going to agree it's okay, despite the fact that the Torah says, Lo sono isha samiso. Nonetheless, I'm going to do this with you. I'm anash embo onah. So on condition that there's no onah here. So what does that mean, there's no onah? Is there onah? Is there not onah? The charge is more than one-sixth of what the going rate, going price is for the product. Is there an issa onah according to the Torah or not? Of course there's an issa onah. So to say she'ein bo onah, that doesn't work, says the Gemara. But if he says, amenah she'ein loch alai onah, on condition that you're not going to assert a claim of onah upon me, so that works. That's considered to be perfectly viable. There's only a side problem, which is that the person doesn't have the smichas das to know exactly how much he's getting ripped off for. So he says, okay, that's okay with me, but he thinks he's getting ripped off a little bit, but he's really being ripped off a lot. So that also is not a valid tonight, because there isn't a requisite smichas das for there to be an appropriate mechila. But it works. The halacha lemaisa, Rambam Baskins, that as long as the extent, the precise amount of the ona'a, of the price differential, is explicitly disclosed, so then that would in fact be a valid tonight. That's how we paskin la halacha, consistent with Rabbi Yehuda Shita, but also consistent with the Mordechai, consistent with this idea, which is phrased by the Ri, which is that when does it depart from the classical rules of Tanai B'nei Gad U'B'nei Reuven? It only departs from the classical rules of Tanai B'nei Gad U'B'nei Reuven when a person is mafkia Dinei Torah, in the words of the Mordechai, or when the person is miskaven lakor mashikosu b'toira, in the words of the Ri. Otherwise, what's the mechanism that's really working according to Rabbi Yehuda? It's a machlokis between the Rashba and the Ramban. So the Rashba, on this daf Nunvav in Suvos, quoted by the Shita Mikubetzis. So the Rashba says, you want to know how it generally works according to Rabbi Yehuda? The way it normally works is that it works through mechila. Generally speaking, if it's a davar shebemamon, you're always allowed to be moichel a davar shebemamon, something which is monetary in nature. Since you're the bailim, ultimately, if it's just a monetary benefit, there's no issur involved, you're entitled to something, so a person can say, it's okay, I'm going to give it up. Entitled to sharing sus, I'm going to give up the sharing sus. Mechila is a perfectly viable mechanism. The Ramban says that it's not working mitam mechila. The Ramban is on Baba Basra, Daf Kuf Chavav, in the context of whether a Tanai can be made in Yerusha. A person has his regular heirs, and he wants to make a Tanai, his regular heirs shouldn't inherit him. So the Gemara says that doesn't work. The Gemara says, why doesn't it work? Yerusha is what? It's money. Davar shebemamon. Why can't a person make a Tanai a Davar shebemamon? After all, it works in the case of sharing sus. So the Gemara says, no, sharing sus is different, because Kayod v'machla. She knows what she's going to be getting, and she's mochelis. Here you have the Moish, who's just deciding on his own that the Yoresh isn't going to inherit him, and the Yoresh mikayada, the Yoresh doesn't know that the Tanai is being made. He should have the ability to be mochel at Tanai. That's the Gemara over there. Most Rishonim work with the assumption that the Gemara doesn't mean what it says.
And there's even a Hagos Eretz Tzvi on the Gemara over there who says, I saw B'Shem Chacham Echad, doesn't disclose who this Chacham Echad is, who has a totally different gears than the Gemara, and says simply that Tanai B'Yerusha doesn't work, period. There's nothing to do with Mechila. Even if there would be Mechila, you can't be Mochel a Yerusha. And the Rashba over there explains the reason you can't be Mochel Yerusha, and it's really more of a technical din rather than a fact-specific din, is because Yerusha is a Milsa de Memela. Yerusha is not something you have any bailus over. You just somebody dies and the Yerusha passes Migzeres HaMelech. It passes as an automatic transfer of the assets, and therefore a Yoresh doesn't have the ability to waive his right to inherit. Once he receives his inheritance, he can give it away, but he doesn't have the ability to make a tanai to waive his right to inherit, since it's a milsa de memela. It's not a milsa haba yidei maisa. It's not something which is handed over by another person. It's just the laws of the Torah automatically enact Yerusha. So what the Rambam refers to as chukas mishpat, since the Torah refers to Yerusha as chukas mishpat. So Rambam says in Hilchos Nachlas and Hilchos Ishus that since the Torah uses the terminology chukas mishpat, this means that a tanai can't be made with respect to Yerusha. The only problem is, the Gemara never says anywhere that we derive from chukas mishpat that Yerusha is treated differently from anything else. If anything, the Gemara seems to say Yerusha is a davar shebemamon, and there's just like some technical reason why you can't have a tanai, either because there's no mechila. So if there was mechila, maybe you could have a tanai. That's how some the Rashbam seems to learn that way on the sugya, others say no, it's really you can't have mechila, but it's just there's a technical problem because it's a milsad memela. If it wouldn't be a milsad memela, so then maybe you couldn't have a tanai. And the Rambam uses this lashon chukas mishpat indicating that it's something different from a davar shebemamon altogether. The Chazon Ish notes this discrepancy in the Rambam, and the Chazon Ish says be'emes ein zedrasha that she'ena rishonim dorshim sukkah me'atzmam. The Chazon Ish says this isn't a real drasha. Rishonim don't have the ability to make up drashas on their own. It's true the Me'iri seems to also have such an idea, but it doesn't have a basis anywhere in the Gemara that there's such a drasha as chukas mishpat, and therefore the Chazon Ish assumes that it's just the Rambam's fancy way of explaining that the words chukas mishpat somehow are a mnemonic of some sort for us to remember that Yerusha, even though it's a davar shebemamon, is a milsa de memela. And because of the fact that it's a milsa de memela, that's why it doesn't pass. That's why it doesn't pass b'Yerusha. So be it as it may, the general assumption of the Rashba is that when you can make a tanai, it's working through mechila. Yerusha, you don't have the ability to do a mechila. The Ramban has a totally different approach. The Ramban on that sugya, the Baba of Basra, says the reason why you're normally allowed to make a tanai is because lochala shibud elam ritzona shalasheni, that a shibud does not become chal unless the other person wants the shibud to be chal. So therefore, as long as one person says, it's true you have a shibud, you would have had a shibud towards me, but I ab initio, from the outset, am stipulating that you're not going to have that shibud. Therefore, the shibud never gets off the ground whatsoever. What's the nafkamina between, and the Ramban would say that in the case of Yerusha, the reason why you can't make a tanai is because the shibud is already in place. That once there is a relationship, testator or a personality and an heir personality, then if the heir is once the relationship has already been formed, then the shibud of the Yerusha that's eventually going to pass from the testator or from the eventual decedent to the heir is already in place. It's just that physically it hasn't passed over yet, but since the shibud is already in place, therefore no tanai can be made. The only thing that can be done is that it can be given away. But if the heir hasn't physically received it yet, he doesn't have the ability to give it away. So therefore, it's kind of in a state of limbo, and that's the reason why it a tanai wouldn't work with respect to Yerusha. So the Ktsos points to Anachos Shemishpat, Siman Reish Tes, Sif Katan Yud Aleph, that there's a nafka mina lahalacha between the approach of the Rashba and the approach of the Ramban. The nafka mina would be the case that Tosos discusses over here, andaf nun vav amud beis. What if a person says not amenasha ein lach alai ona, or amenasha ein lach alai sher ksus ve'ona, but he adds the word din. Says that what if the person says you don't have the din of sher ksus ve'ona? The entire din is not going to be is not going to be applicable in this case. So the Ktsos says that if in fact the reason why tanai normally works is based on mechila, so then you can't be moichel a din. As we said before, there's no bailus. You don't have the ability to be moichel a din. I can say you can be moichel my chiyuv towards you of sharing sus, but you can't be moichel the din of sharing tzus. However, if you hold like the Ramban, that the premise is that the shibud never gets off the ground unless the person who would benefit from the shibud wants the shibud to get off the ground, so no aspect of the shibud gets off the ground. Not even the din of sharing tzus is going to get off the ground. And as long as he's saying he's not being mafkia, he's not saying there's no such thing as sharing sus. There is such a thing as sharing sus. It's just that the din of sharing sus is not going to be applicable to our relationship because the shibud will not get off the ground. So that would be permissible according to the Ramban. So the Ktsos quotes the Mishnah Lamelech in Hilchos Ishus Perek Vav. As accepting the opinion of the Rashba and therefore holding that a Tanai Amenashe Ein Lach Alai Din sharing Sus would not be enforceable, and the Tzos favors the opinion of the Ramban and therefore says that in his opinion if a person would say Amenashe Ein Lach Alai Din sharing Sus, that would be perfectly fine. The only thing that a person can do is to be Oker Dine Torah, to be Mafkia Dine Torah. What are other manifestations of being Oker Dine Torah? So one is what the Chazon Ish talks about in his Chidushim to Sanhedrin, Simen Tezvav Sifkat and Dalet. Says, what if you have individuals who decide that they're going to overhaul the entire system of halacha? Say, you know, we have a system of halacha, but we live in modern times. Modern times, we want to do things differently, and we want to have a different system of law. Let's say you have a bunch of, in theory, Jews living in Eretz Yisrael, and they say that instead of having a Torah system of law on the books, we're going to create a totally independent, separate civil system of law based on British law, based on Ottoman law, and we're going to establish a court system along those lines. We're going to make a tanai that we're only going to follow the separate civil system. So the Chazon Ish wrote in Sanhedrin, Simen Tesvav Sif Dalet, he says that it's one thing that if a person makes a tanai in a particular case. However, if you're going to make a condition, the Torah law is never going to be applicable to you anymore, then what you're essentially doing, if you're yaskimu al chukim that are counter to the Torah, harei he machalim es haTorah, ve'al zeh nema shetosim lifneim o lifnei adyotos, that would be a violation of the pasuk in the Torah, that says Eila Mishpatim Asher Tassim Lifnehem, and we know the Chazal derived what? Lifnehem Lo Lifnei Akum, Lifnehem Lo Lifnehem Yotos. What's the problem with this Chazunish? Ramban, in Parshas Mishpatim, says there's a difference between the drasha of Lifnehem Lo Lifnei Akum and the drasha of Lifnehem Lo Lifnei Yotos. The drasha of Lifnehem Lo Lifnei Akum is non-negotiable. You can't go to civil courts. If you have two parties who stipulate between themselves and making a tenai, we're going to go to civil court, so the tenai is null and void. Why? Because the masnaman adama shebe iser, it's a ritual prohibition. Because miyakir alilim, your mechal es Hashem, if you are going, if you are abandoning the batei din the Torah system of law, and instead accept upon yourself the civil courts. However, says the Ramban, when it comes to Lifnehem Lo Lifnei Yotos, the fact you're supposed to go to Mumchen, okay, so you go to three Jews who are not necessarily Mumchen, they're Hedyotos, but you accept them upon yourself, you're Mekapel on yourself, Shlosha Roe Boker, three shepherds are going to decide your case, we're not going to call that a bezdin per se, but if the both parties agree to it and they make it tonight, so you're allowed to make it tonight to appear before Yotos. So what then is the reason that the Chazon Ish says that this is impermissible? Im yaskimu achukim, everybody agrees. So why then is it a violation of Asher Tassim Lifnehem V'lo Lifnei Yotos? The Chazon Ish doesn't quote V'lo Lifnei Akum. The Chazon Ish says this is a violation V'lo Lifnei Yotos. The answer is that a tonight to accept the Yotos is okay, as long as what? What's the principle of the Mordechai, the principle of the Ri and Tosfos and Daf Nun Vav? As long as you're not okay, Divrei Torah. So what's the problem over here? The problem is, this isn't just one individual case in which parties say, okay, we're going to accept a certain civil statute as binding in our transaction. It's an entire community which is okay as HaTorah in order to establish a competing system of law. Says the Chazon Ish, it's no different, better, if you're coming in Uven Yisrael, if instead of going in front of non-Jews, you're going to go in front of Jewish judges who are following an alien system, but that's even worse, because they have rejected and defied the laws of the Torah for the laws of nothingness. And even if there is a complete askama, everybody makes a tanai together, the tanai is batal. If you're going to force people to abide by such a system, that's considered to be gezev oshik, and that results in the same effect as the yisur akaros of being meirim yad b'toras moshe. So what really is going on in the Chazon Ish? I suggest this is another manifestation of the idea tonight doesn't work if it's going to be Okia Divrei Torah. And Mistama, that's also the explanation of the Shitas HaRashba. The Rashba in Chelek Vav, Simen Reish Nun Dalet of Ishailo Sechuvos, the Rashba deals with the following question. There was a man who married off his daughter. He gave her a nice dowry. And after the daughter had a child, unfortunately, tragedy struck. First the daughter died, then the child died, and the father wanted his dowry back. According to halacha, what happens, the halacha is that a husband inherits his wife. But the man said, in my community, the civil law is that the dowry, once the wife dies and there are no children, so the dowry goes back to the father-in-law, and therefore I want my dowry back because this is the civil law. There were also various takanashum like this, but he's not assuming that that was binding in that particular community. So what the father said is, I want the dowry to go back to me based on the principles and provisions of civil law. And the Rashba writes a tshuva in which the Rashba says, you know, if you look in the Yerushalmi said people used to make a tanai about this. They used to make a tanai that if this would happen, the dowry would go back to the father. And if they made such a tanai, that would be perfectly fine. And if, in fact, that was the custom that was followed by the Jews, because that was the Jewish custom, then you should follow that custom even if you didn't make an explicit tonight. It will be considered as if you made it tonight. But, says the Rashba, if you're doing this, kidei lakos is a goyim, if you're doing this solely because of the fact that this is what is done by the non-Jewish nations around you, and not because you would have independently thought of it on your own, but you want to do away with our own system of Dinei Yerusha, and you want to just follow whatever they have on the books because you're copycatting them, so then he says that would be completely null and void, and Torah Matehe Aleh, that would be the end of the Torah as we know it, and therefore, Chas V'Sholom, says the Rashba, that it should even be considered that such a thing be done. So everybody kind of scratches their head a little bit at this Rashba. What is the Rashba saying? First, the Rashba says, oh, you want to make a tnai about this? Go, Gesunta hate. It's a wonderful thing, perfectly permissible, 100% valid. Hey, it's even a Yerushalmi. Then the Rashba says that you're being okay as a Torah, and you are destroying our tradition, and of course, such a thing cannot even be considered. So what's the Hesber in the Rashba? Simple Hesber in the Rashba is along the lines of this very same principle. Are the people making a Tanai? Making a Tanai, perfectly fine, perfectly permissible. Happens that the Tanai is consistent with the practice of the civil nations around you. Logara doesn't make it any worse. But if the intention is that you're going to go and research what are the civil courts doing, what do the civil laws require, and we're just going to imitate the civil laws, not because we have any particular desire, not because we as a community feel that this is a takana that from a Jewish communal perspective makes sense, but just because we want to be like the nations of the world, and we're going to do away with our own laws of Yerusha in order to adopt their laws. So that, says the Rashba, that's completely impermissible. That would be null and void. That's along the same lines, I would say, of this basic principle. Now, even Rabbi Yehuda, who says Kol Tanai Shebemamon Kayim, there are limitations. We mentioned that with respect to the Ksuva, so an oral waiver would not be binding. We paskin like Rabbi Meir in this respect, not that we hold that Master Mashikosu B'Davar Shebemamon Tano Batil. But we hold that when it comes to the ksuva, that's one thing that can't be waived. Even if you waive it in writing, you paskin, it can't be waived. That's how it's paskin in Shulchan Aruch. Why is that? So the Rabbi Meir simply says, if you poches min a ksuva, you poches min masayim for a besula, min mane for an almana, so then that would be null and void, and the woman is entitled to the full amount. However, because she's lo sam kadaita, the wife thinks that she's getting a lower deal, says the Mishnah. She thinks that she's getting less than what she's entitled to. Therefore, it's going to end up being what? It's going to end up being a bilas nus, because she's lo sam kadaita, and therefore, all the bilos over the course of the marriage are going to be considered to be bi'ilas nus. So, question arises, why is it, first of all, that the Tanai is batel in this case? We paskin like Rabbi Yehuda. So there are two explanations, really. One explanation is given by the Lecha Mishnah, that in this particular case, it's not the regular machlokis between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. In this particular case, Lecha Mishnah is in Hilchos Ishus, Perek Yud Beis, Siv Vav. In this particular case, this is a davar shebe iser. What's the davar shebe iser? Because we paskin like Rabbi Meir regarding the iser. This is in an iser that is explicitly spelled out in Baba Kama on Daf Peites Amud Aleph that aser la'adam lishos misha b'liksuva pidu sha'achas. You're not allowed to be with a woman without a ksuva pidu sha'achas. So since there is an iser lishos pidu sha'achas, so therefore, this is not a Tanai al davar shebe mamon. This is a Tanai al davar shebe iser. A Tanai al davar shebe iser, we can also suggest, is yet another manifestation of this principle. Why is a Tanai al davar shebe iser? Why doesn't it work? Because you're okay divrei Torah. You're okay divrei Torah. You're not the bailam of a davar shebe iser beveheta. You can't be okay divrei Torah. Therefore, the Tanai doesn't work. That's why we say that in such a case, the Tanai is batel, and the maise is kayim. The Tanai would be completely batel, and that the woman would be entitled to the full extent of her ksuba. The Bar Hetev spells out that it's really an extension of our Gemara. Our Gemara said, according to Rabbi Yehuda, that when it comes to the ksuba, which we assume ksuba is the Rabbanan, asu chachamim chizik l'divrayim yoter mishel Torah, so this is a further manifestation of the chachamim making a chizik l'divrayim yoter mishel Torah, namely that while on a Torah level we would say that the Tanai Shebemamon is kayim with respect to Aksuba, which is an Adora Drabbanan level, the Chachamim made a greater chizik in this case, and they said that even though it's only a Davish Shebemamon, leaving aside even the consideration of Davish Shebeisr, let's call it a Davish Shebemamon. Nonetheless, the Chachamim asu chizik l'divrayim yotem mishel Torah, and they said in this particular case, the Tanai will be batel, even though had it been mishel Torah, the Tanai would have been kayim. So one can ask the question, so according to that principle that we hold like, that if your poches nebesula mimasayim uli almane mimane, that it would be considered to be a bilas nus because she's not some chadaita, so what if she absolutely agreed to a complete waiver of the ksuba, and there's and she is someches das over the fact that she's going to get absolutely nothing. In this case, the husband wrote to her that you're getting only 150 zuz instead of 200 zuz. She thinks that she's not entitled to the full amount. Really, she's entitled to the full amount. It's the Mishnah on Nun Aleph Amin Aleph. So we say that's considered to be a bilas nus because she's lo samcha daita. But what if she's completely sameches das in the sense that she knows exactly how much she's getting, and in fact, let's say there's a tanai that she's not going, she's not going to get anything. So is that going to work? So the Tosfos deals with that. A nun aleph, I'm an aleph. Minalon the chol apoches rafilu b'tznai, but tonight says, how do we know that even if it's done with a tanai, that it wouldn't be good? Dilma b'tznai mode Rabbi Meir, the tznai okayim. Maybe Rabbi Meir would agree that if it was done with a tanai, it would be okay. The chol apoches the mashma the filu b'osu ingin sheishla. Okay, so the Tosfos says like this. One second. So he says that what's the reason that Rabbi Meir holds asul adam sheisha mishto sha'akas below ksuba? So Tosfos points out that the reason is my timer. What's the reason? No. Why is it you can't be? What's the reason for the yisur lishos imisha below ksuba? Kidei shlote kala beinav lotzia. So he says there's an independent consideration over here. One is the consideration that the woman doesn't have smichus das. There's a second consideration, shloite kala bein al leotzia. So even if she had a complete smichus das, nonetheless, if she doesn't have the full amount of the ksuva that she's entitled to, it's still going to be a problem of shloite kala bein al leotzia. Akein mira de Rabbi Meir lo mibaya kamer. Therefore, it seems the Rabbi Meir really is saying a lo mibaya. Lomi by heka de leis la davia bilas a bilas o bilas nos mishum the kalabain of leotzia, that lomi baya when she doesn't have at all that it would be it's certainly considered to be a bilas nos because then the husband will not have any impediment towards divorcing her, he won't have to pay her anything. Elafilu isla. But even a case where doesn't work, where he stipulates an amount, he's poches mimasayim, ulomana mimane, we say that she thinks that she's going to get less, but she's really entitled to more. So even in that case, where she's going to get the ksuba, kimno samka daita, havya bilaso bilasnos. So what's the nafkamina? A nafkamina could be a case where she's mocheles beferish. She said, I'm mocheles my ksuba. Mocheles a ksuba. Would she be entitled to be mocheles a ksuba? There she says, I don't want it. I don't need it. Nonetheless, since it's still going to ask, lo tei kala beina of leotzia, Satosis concludes, that's still going to be a problem of bilasnos. That's a problem for couples who sign prenuptial agreements before they get married. We have our standard halakhic prenuptial agreement that ensures that if a couple has a dispute about the get, they'll go to the bezdin, the husband will pay a certain amount of money every single day in order to motivate him to end the marriage sooner if, in fact, it's not a viable marriage, and give a get. Because otherwise he'd have to pay his wife the support amount every single day. That's what we call the halakhic prenuptial agreement, right? But there's a standard prenuptial agreement. A lot of couples sign. If one party has a lot of money and they're afraid it'll be a short marriage and the other person will take away all of their money. I had cases like this. A rich girl marries some poor yeshiva, bachur shlub, who doesn't have any money to his name. Gets, I don't know, $250 a month or something. So she's afraid that maybe the marriage won't work out and then he'll take away all the money. So they enter into a prenuptial agreement. The prenuptial agreement says, the wife says, I don't want any of your money. If we get divorced, I won't take a thing, but you're not going to get any of my money either. So what about the ksuba? We just said that if you make a tenai with the ksuba, okay, so the tenai is going to be batel, but nonetheless, the wife doesn't know that the tenai is batel. Therefore, she goes some kadaita. Therefore, the bila is bila's nus. So what do you do in such a situation? So you'll say, well, they sign the prenuptial agreement on Monday. On Tuesday, they get married. They sign the ksuva on Tuesday. So it's a later in time document. It supersedes the prenuptial agreement. So at the very least, she's going to be entitled to get the ksuva. Nothing to worry about. There was a case like this. Came up in New York civil court probably about 40 years ago. It was called In Re Estate of White, I think was the name of the case. And the husband died, and the wife wanted to receive the ksuba. And the husband's children, this was a second marriage, the husband's children said, no way, she's not entitled to the ksuba money, because she signed this prenuptial agreement, which says that she's waiving her right to any monies. And the wife said, but we signed the ksuba the next day. And the judge said, come on, the ksuba, we know, was just meant to be some religious hocus-pocus document. It didn't have any kind of a legal authority. The real legal document was the prenuptial agreement that had lawyers involved, it had all this legalese language in it. And therefore, it's clear that the parties did not intend to supersede the prenuptial agreement with the ksuba. Well, if that would be the law, if it ever was litigated, say you had a case where it had to be litigated, one party refused to go to Bezdin or whatever, so that could create a situation of lo sam kadaita, which means that we have to be very careful, bisman hazeh, if parties enter into that type of a prenuptial agreement, it has to carve out explicitly, even though the wife is waiving all of her rights to anything, that does not include the right to the ksuba. The ksuba, at the very least, the 200 zuz of the ikra ksuba, however it would be evaluated, that $600, whatever it comes out to right now, depends how you evaluate the ksuba, right? According to some shitas, the 200 zuz of a ksuba is equivalent to the buying power of 200 zuz at the time of Chazal, where that was the amount of money that you could subsist on over the course of the year, so you didn't have to take from the tamkoi, you didn't have to take from public charity funds. So there are some poskim who say it means a year's worth of support. It's much more substantial than whatever would be the technical silver worth of 200 zuz or 50 shkolim bisman hazeh. So you need a bezdin to be able to evaluate what exactly the 200 zuz were, but the parties at the very least, despite whatever else they want to put in the prenuptial agreement, they would have to include that aspect in the prenuptial agreement that the woman is entitled to this amount. There's a suggestion that's floated by the Chelkos Mechokek in Simon Sadi Beis that maybe this consideration of shlote kala bein of the otzia only relates to divorce. So therefore, if it was only a question of, let's say the woman said, okay, you'll pay me the ksuba in the event we ever get divorced, but let's say they wanted to say in the event of death, so then she would waive the ksuba. So that doesn't create a shlote kala bein of the otzia problem, because when he dies, he's not being megarisha. That's not his just taking lightly how much money he has to pay upon a divorce. Unless you say that if he knew that his estate would have to pay out such a large sum, he would work harder at staying alive. But that's generally assumed to be the case. So therefore, suggests the Chokos Mechokek, based on a Mordechai, that maybe there's room to distinguish between this waiver with respect to divorce and with respect to death. However, if you look at Tosfos, I think Ketaf Lamed Tes, Amid Beis, in Ksuvos, I want to do something in Elu Naros, so Adap Lamed Tes, so Tosfos seems to foreclose this possibility. There's a Divrei Malkiel, Chelek Gadalit of the Tshuvos of the Divrei Malkiel, Simen Kuf Nun Hei, where he also talks about prenuptial agreements and this possibility. And based on this Tosfos, and the Mordechai, not the Mordechai, the Divrei Malkiel dismisses this idea that the Chilkos Mechoke quotes in the name of the Mordechai. He says, Temelari, kimin de taima shlote kala ve'ena ve'otzia, since the whole reason for the ksuva altogether is shlote kala ve'ena ve'otzia, amana amaita kinula rabbanan ksuva. So why do the amana have to have a ksuva altogether? And at the very least, maybe we can argue that she should at least be able to engage in a waiver of the ksuva. Lo yalehem atakin el agusha bo'bad, the omeri, to be talk shahutzukul atakin begusha shlote kala bein of the otzia, since it's like a gilgul sort of thing. That once we already establish a necessity, require a ksuva for a grusha shlote kala kala bein of the otzia, so then we can come up with another reason we wouldn't have thought of on our own to have the same level a requirement with respect to an almana, namely what? Takinu nami le almana mishimchina. Mishimchina, namely what? That the women will want to get married to the men, because they figure that even if the man dies, they'll get something out of it. They'll get some ksuba out of it. So even though that might not have been an independently sufficient reason to be misakin a ksuba for an almana in the first place, once we're doing it for a grusha, so then we'll do it for an almana, and the Divrei Malkiel assumes that means with equal force, and therefore no tanai or forgiveness would be possible under those circumstances. The other place in Hilchos Ksuvos where we find that we don't allow for a waiver is with respect to the Yerusha Sabal. Yerusha Sabal, Big Machlokis, later on, Daf Pei Gimel. Big Machlokis, whether it's a Deraisa or whether it is a Derabanan. Paskin, like Rav Shimon ben Gamliel in the Mishnah over there, that if you make a Tanai that the husband's not going to inherit, that the Tanai is Batel. What's the reason that the Tanai is batel? So the Rambam writes very explicitly in Hilchos Ishus that even though the Yerusha of the Baal is divrei soferim, nonetheless, once they are married to each other, it becomes, and the Chachamim were misakein ksuva, so that it entered, not the ksuva, they are misakein the inheritance of the husband's machlokis in the Gemara. Machlokis, whether Yerusha Sabal is deraisa d'rabbanan. The Rambam assumes that it's Durabanan. The Rambam writes Divrei Sofim, so you'll tell me don't equate Divrei Sofim with Durabanan in the Rambam. Don't fall into that trap. But the Rambam also uses the words Midivreyem. It's clear from the context that the Rambam merely meant Durabanan in this particular case. But the Rambam says, nonetheless, it falls into the realm of Chukas Mishpat. However, says the Rambam, that in the event that a Tanai is made prior to the Nisuin, the Tanai is made between the Erisin and the Nisuin, the Ran writes, based on the Gemara and Pei Gimel, the Ran writes this Nandapi Arif and Daf Mem Aleph, that before the Erisin can make a Tanai because the husband has no Shaykhus to the Yerusha, it's a Dovash Lo Baal Yolam. After the Erisin, it's a Dovash Baal Yolam, but it hasn't yet entered into his domain because he doesn't have the ability to inherit from his husband until, from his wife until the time of the Nisuin. So therefore, the Shibud hasn't yet been Chal, as it were. So therefore, he has this window of time. He's going to enter into a prenuptial agreement in which the husband is going to waive his rights to inherit from his wife. So it would have to be under the chuppah between the Erisin and the Nisuin. A lot of tshuvas in the Chavos Yoyer about how you do that bisman is there, that we only have 2 minutes between the Erisin and the Nisuin, except the technical question. But the Rambam says it would be permissible between the time of the Erusin and the Nisuin. The question is, why would it be permissible during that moment in time? If you assume, like the Chazon Ish says, that normally what the Rambam means when he says you can't make a Tanai in Yerusha is because it's really a Milsa de Memela. And the idea of Chukas Mishpat is Lav Dafka. It's just it's a Milsa de Memela. So we understand, before the Nisuin, it's not a Milsa de Memela that the husband is going to inherit because he doesn't have the right to inherit until the Nisuin. If the wife would die during the Erusin, he wouldn't inherit at all. But if we assume that Chukas Mishpat is meant seriously and that it's really considered Yerusha, is really considered to be a Dover, a Shebe Isser. And we have this notion that you can't be okay Divrei Torah, you can't be Mafkia Dinei Torah, whenever it's a Divrei Torah, Dover Isser. The reason why it doesn't work, even according to Rabbi Yehuda, is because then your mamash being Mafkia Dinei Torah. So what's the explanation in the Rambam? So I think you can explain the Rambam based on a Chiddush of the Griz. The Chiddush of Griz al Rambam, Rebelbo Soloveitchik, in the Hilkos Nachlos, Perek Vav, Halacha Yud talks about another halacha of the Rambam, where the Rambam says Tanai can work in the realm of Yerusha. What's the case over there? The case there is talking about a ger being Yoresh's father. So can a ger be Yoresh's father? Well, ger in his guy kashinola dummy. So at the Raisa level, he's not going to inherit his father. However, on the Drabbanim level, the Drabbanim are misakin that he inherits his father. It says the Rambam, since this inheritance is only on a Drabbanim level, therefore, we have a special dispensation that if the non-Jewish father wants to disown his son for having converted to Judaism and wants to make a Tanai that he's not going to get a penny of his money, so the non-Jewish father, even al pi halacha, has the ability to do that, and then the ger does not inherit his father. So the question is, when it came to Yerusha Sabal, which the Rambam said is only Drabbanan, the Rambam says, once it enters into the realm of Nisuin, the husband is no longer able to be moichel, make a tanai that he's not going to inherit his wife at that moment in time, because once it's in the realm of Yerusha, it's in the realm of Chukas Mishpat. Why is it any different with respect to the case of the ger and his father? So Sevelva Soloveitchik explains that according to the Rambam, Yerusha has two components. One component of Yerusha is the component of Sveidin. One component is Chukas Mishpat, and the second component is that there's also an aspect of Mamonos. That really fundamentally, even the Rambam uses this Lashon. Even when the Rambam says that the reason you can't make a Tanai in Yerusha is because of Chukas Mishpat, what is not often noticed in the Lashon of the Rambam, the Rambam says, Afa pi shedava shetanai b'mamon hu. Even though it's a Tanai shedava shebemamon, nonetheless you can't do it because it's a Chukas Mishpat. So he says really there are two aspects. There's the Chukas Mishpat aspect, and there's the Dovah Shem HaMamon aspect. As far as the Dovah Shem HaMamon aspect is concerned, of course the Tanai would be able to be made. As far as the Chukas Mishpat aspect is concerned, so this is already Dovah Shem HaIsser, and that can't be made. So with respect to Yerusha Sager, the Chachamim were misakin that there's only a Mamonous aspect to this Yerusha, and there's no Chukas Mishpat aspect to the Yerusha. Since there's only a mamonous aspect with respect to this Yerusha, because there's no Chukas Mishpat when it comes to laws of inheritance for non-Jews, only with respect to the Jewish community, therefore, it's possible to make a Tanai. So by virtue of that distinction, based on the Griz, you can say the same thing to explain the Rambam Shita with respect to Yerusha Sabal Es Isha. That here as well, there are tzrei dinim. There is the din of Chukas Mishpat, and there is the din of the Mamonos. Says the Rambam, when is it that the Chukas Mishpat settles in? The Chachamim were misakein at the time of Nisuin. That is when the husband has the ability to inherit his wife, and that is when Chukas Mishpat sets in. Once the Chukas Mishpat sets in, so then a Tanai can't be made. But what about the period prior to Nisuin? So says the Rambam, since this is a different type of inheritance, this is Bar Mishpachto, inheritance that comes from the family, it's not an inheritance which is Memela, therefore we treat it differently. We don't impose the Chukas Mishpat on this type of an inheritance until the time of Nisuin. So what's the nature of this Yerusha between the time of the Erusin and the time of the Nisuin. So the nature of the Yerusha Sabah Mina Isha during this period of time only has the aspect of Mamonos, doesn't have the aspect of Chukas Mishpat. Once it only has the aspect of Mamonos, so then we can apply the principle of Kol Tanai Shemamon Kayim, that it's no Havkaz Dinei Torah, and therefore that is why it is perfectly valid to make the Tanai during that period of time according to the Rambam. Okay, stop here. Okay, we'll dive a minute.
Okay. Okay. Okay.